This is Janice Schweizer returning with part two of the pantograph for Tuesday, December 10th, 2024. We begin on page A4 with the death notices. William E. Bill Grace, 73, of Streeter, formerly of Gridley, passed away on Friday, December 6th, 2024. Visitation will be held on Thursday, December 12th, from 5 to 7 p.m. at Calvert and Johnson Memorial Home in El Paso. A funeral service will follow on Friday, December 13th, 2024, at 10 a.m. at Christ Community Church in Gridley, officiated by Pastor Grant Stouter. Interment will be at Gridley Cemetery in Gridley. Memorial contributions may be made to the Alzheimer's Association at 225 North Michigan Avenue, Floor 17 in Chicago, 60601. Pauline M. Williams, 89, of Lincoln, passed away on Friday, November 8, 2024, at the Springfield Memorial Hospital. A mass of Christian burial will be held on Saturday, December 14, at 10:30 a.m. at Holy Family Church in Lincoln. Cremation rites have been accorded and the rite of committal and burial will be in Holy Cross Cemetery. Funeral arrangements are entrusted with Peasley Funeral Home of Lincoln. Next, we'll look at sports, where we have in high school basketball, seeds set for State Farm. The 45th tournament will be held December 26th through the 30th by Randy Reinhart. Seven state-ranked basketball teams are among the top four seeds across the four brackets in the 45th annual State Farm Holiday Classic. The four 16-team brackets were announced Monday for the tournament to be held December 26th and 28th and 30th at four venues across Bloomington Normal. Games will be played at Illinois Wesleyan Shirk Center, as well as at Bloomington, Normal Community, and Normal West High Schools. The tournament features the number one ranked boys team in Class 1A in Pecatonia and the number one girls team in 3A in Washington. Pecatonia is the number one seed in the small school boys bracket. St. Joseph Ogden is seeded second, University High third, and Kankakee Bishop McNamara is fourth. Led by Miami of Ohio recruit LaShawn Stowers, 3A number 4 ranked Peoria High is the large school boys top seed. Bradley Bourbonnais, which features Illinois State bound Nick Allen, is the number 2 seed, with Normal Community and Central Michigan recruit Kobe Walker the number 3 seed. Rock Island was seeded fourth. The large school girls bracket has Washington at its top seed. Chicago St. Ignatius is listed fourth in the initial 4A state rankings, is the second seed. Normal Community is seeded third, with Class 3A, number 4 Kankakee is the fourth seed. Camp Point Central Augusta Southeastern, the number 9 ranked team in 2A, is the small school girls top seed for the Classic. Class 2A, number 4, Kankakee Bishop McNamara is second, with Central Catholic third and Paris fourth. Class 2A, complete brackets are available at the classic.org/brackets. Chicago Simeon is the number 1 seed for the 93rd Pontiac Holiday Tournament, which will be held December 26th through 28th at Pontiac High School. Chicago DePaul, ranked second in 3A, is the second seed, with Chicago Curry third. Class 4A, number 10, Bennett Academy, is the number 4 seed for the 16-team event. Also part of the tournament is 2A, number 1, ranked Peoria Manual. This complete bracket is located at PontiacHolidayTournament.com/bracket. Scott Ritchie with the News Gazette writes, Illinois accepts bid to Citrus Bowl. Citrus Bowl representatives attended enough Illinois football games in the second half of the regular season that investing in property in Champaign or Urbana might have made real sense. Add in the bowl game projections, college football's version of bracketology, the last several weeks, and the Illini winding up in Orlando, Florida for a New Year's Eve game seemed like an inevitability. The only thing that could throw a wrench in the works was the college football playoff. More precisely, the CFP committee and its view on four Big Ten teams making the inaugural 12-team playoff field. That's what Josh Whitman was tracking in the last week plus. We knew as long as that happened that we were feeling pretty solid in that fifth position, that first non-CFB bowl position, the Illinois athletic director said. But you never know until you know. Sunday, as the CFP rankings were revealed, and we saw four Big Ten teams in the 12-team field, we felt confident this would be the landing point. When the phone rang, it was a welcome conversation. The phone call from Sharon Lyne Clary, the president of the Florida Citrus Sports Executive Committee, came with an official Citrus Bowl invitation for Illinois at 9-3, and a December 31 showdown with South Carolina, also 9-3. Kickoff is at 2 p.m. at Camping World Stadium. Of course, we enthusiastically accepted, Whitman said. As someone who's been around this place for almost 30 years, this was one of those years. This was one of those years that will go down in the record books, that our fans will be talking about 20 years from now, 30 years from now. Illinois put itself in, at minimum, just making a bowl game with a 21-7 victory against Michigan on October 19th that doubled as a top 25 victory and came in front of a sellout crowd at Memorial Stadium as 100 years of football in that building was celebrated. Plenty to celebrate in most cases, given bowl eligibility has been far from a guarantee at Illinois. No one talked about becoming bowl eligible, Illinois coach Brett Bielema said about the mood that day. No one really mentioned it. I didn't talk about it. That's because Bielema wanted bowl eligibility to be seen as the standard at Illinois, a bare minimum of success, even for a program that had played in just 15 bowl games in the previous four decades. This season deviated from what had been the norm in Champaign. Getting to 9 wins in the regular season marked just the 8th time that's happened in program history. Beating South Carolina later this month and getting to 10 wins would tie a program record set in 1902 and then repeated in 1983, 89, and 2001. We have to make sure we allow ourselves a moment to be happy, Whitman said. We have to look around for a minute and recognize where we've come from, where we are, and enjoy these experiences. Bowl games are supposed to be fun. It's a tremendous opportunity for our program for so many different reasons. In the next breath, we always have to make sure we're not confusing happiness with complacency. We can't ever accept that this is as high as we will go. The expectation that we will continue to push the envelope, that will be competing for Big Ten and national championships. Illinois was ranked number 20 in the final CFP rankings, also a first for the program. Despite some social media campaigning from Bielema, one, a subtle jab at Lane Kiffin and Mississippi's own playoff case, the Illinois coach knew his 3-loss team wasn't going to be in the mix for one of the 7 at-large bids. Even going 10-2 might not have made it a lock. But the Illini were at least in the conversation, if on the fringes, for the first time. The margins are very thin, and there's an opportunity with the expanded field for us to knock on that door more years than not, Whitman said. With the guy we've got in the corner office down there, I like our chances. We're really happy where we are, but we've got a lot more work in front of us. In the short term, that's South Carolina. The Gamecocks finished the regular season with a 6-game winning streak, featuring victories against 4 ranked teams in Texas A&M, Vanderbilt, Missouri, and Clemson. They lost a heartbreaker against Alabama and then have won 6 straight games against really good opponents, Bielema said. I've been in that league. I know what it's all about. Super excited about the matchup. My first ever bowl game as a head coach was against the University of Arkansas in this very game. A game that we won and gave us 12 wins at Wisconsin. That set the program record for wins. To have a chance to tie that here at Illinois with a 10th win would be awesome. At the moment, Illinois should have most of its roster available for the Citrus Bowl. Only senior wide receiver Pat Bryant won't play as he begins preparations for the 2025 NFL Draft. The Illini also submitted initial paperwork to the NFL for 5 underclassmen, including defensive back Xavier Scott and outside linebacker defensive lineman Gabe Jackus. We turned in their paperwork as fast as we could to get their grade reports back, and then we'll have those conversations, Bielma said. To this point, I think the only one that's going to not play is Pat. I've had some initial conversations not only with Xavier and Gabe, but also a lot of other players. I had about 25 player meetings last week. I'll meet with my entire roster over the next 2 weeks, and obviously you can always get surprises. In national and international news, we have census to gather more racial and ethnic data by Tim Henderson with Stateline.org. The U.S. Census Bureau is starting to gather more detailed information about Americans' race and ethnicity, a change some advocates say will allow people to choose identities that more closely reflect how they see themselves. Crunching and sorting through those specific details, known as data disaggregation, will help illuminate disparities in areas such as housing and health outcomes that could be hidden within large racial and ethnic categories. However, some experts say the details might make it harder for Black people from multiracial countries to identify themselves. Racial data gleaned from the census is important because local, state, tribal, and federal governments use it to guide certain civil rights policies and in planning and funding government programs that provide funds or services for specific groups, according to the Census Bureau. The form will have checkboxes for main categories. Current census groupings include Asian, Black, African American, and white, among others, followed by more specific checkboxes under Asian, for example, might be Chinese, Asian Indian, Filipino, Vietnamese, Korean, or Japanese. There will be an empty box for people to write in more specific subgroups. Collecting more detail by allowing free form answers, for example, will make it possible for people to identify themselves as part of a more racial and ethnic subgroup, such as Sardinian from an autonomous region within Italy, instead of simply Italian, and include alternative names for certain groups, such as writing Shitsumush, the ancient language for Coeur d'Alene tribes. The Census Bureau will, for the first time, include Middle Eastern, North African as a separate racial ethnic category for respondents with that heritage. Until now, Middle Eastern people who did not choose a race were treated as a subcategory under white based on a 1944 court ruling intended to protect Arab immigrants from racist laws banning U.S. citizenship for non-white immigrants. Under new federal guidelines approved in March, the Bureau will also give people the option to check no race at all if they identify as Hispanic or Middle Eastern North African. The Census Bureau already decided to use more open-ended questions in both the 2027 American Community Survey and the nation's 2030 census. The agency is seeking public comment on the way write-in responses will be categorized. Next, we have Assad flees after 13 years of war. Decades-long dynasty comes to an end amid bitter civil conflict by Zina Karam and Abby Sewell. Syrian President Bashar Assad fled the country Sunday, bringing to a dramatic close his 13-year struggle to hold on to control as his country fragmented in a brutal civil war that became a proxy battlefield for regional and international powers. The exit of Assad, 59, stood in stark contrast to his first months as Syria's unlikely president in 2000, when many hoped he would be a young reformer after 3 decades of his father's iron grip. At age 34, the Western-educated ophthalmologist appeared as a geeky, tech-savvy fan of computers with a gentle demeanor. But when faced with protests of his rule that erupted in March 2011, Assad turned to the brutal tactics of his father to crush dissent. As the uprising hemorrhaged into an outright civil war, he unleashed his military to blast opposition-held cities with support from allies Iran and Russia. The war has killed nearly 500,000 people and displaced half of the country's pre-war population of 23 million. International rights group and prosecutors alleged widespread use of torture and extrajudicial killings in Syria's government-run detention centers. The conflict appeared to be frozen in recent years, and though Damascus remained under crippling Western sanctions, neighboring countries began to resign themselves to Assad's continued hold on power. In November, opposition groups in northwest Syria launched an offensive. Government forces quickly collapsed while Assad's allies, preoccupied by other conflicts, Russia's war in Ukraine and the wars between Israel and the Iran-backed militant groups, Hezbollah and Hamas, appeared reluctant to forcefully intervene. Assad came to power in 2000 by a twist of fate. His father cultivated Bashar's oldest brother, Basil, as his successor, but in 1994, Basil was killed in a car crash in Damascus. Bashar was brought home from his ophthalmology practice in London, put through military training, and elevated to the rank of colonel to establish his credentials so he could one day rule. When Hafez Assad died in 2000, Parliament quickly lowered the presidential age requirement from 40 to 34. Bashar's elevation was sealed by a nationwide referendum in which he was the only candidate. Hafez, a lifelong military man, ruled the country for nearly 30 years, during which he set up a Soviet-style centralized economy and kept such a stifling hand over dissent that Syrians feared even to joke about politics to their friends. He pursued a secular ideology that sought to bury sectarian differences under Arab nationalism and the image of heroic resistance to Israel. He formed an alliance with the Shiite clerical leadership in Iran, sealed Syrian domination over Lebanon, and set up a network of Palestinian and Lebanese militant groups. Tall and lanky, with a slight lisp, Bashar had a quiet, gentle demeanor. His only official position before becoming president was head of the Syrian Computer Society. His wife, Asma al-Akras, whom he married months after taking office, was attractive, stylish, and British-born. The young couple, who eventually had three children, seemed to shun the trappings of power. They lived in an apartment in the upscale Abu Rumana district of Damascus, as opposed to a palatial mansion like other Arab leaders. Initially, upon coming to office, Assad freed political prisoners and allowed more open discourse. In the Damascus Spring, salons for intellectuals emerged where Syrians could discuss art, culture, and politics to a degree impossible under his father. But after 1,000 intellectuals signed a public petition But after 1,000 intellectuals signed a public petition calling for multi-party democracy and greater freedoms in 2001, and others tried to form a political party, the salons were snuffed out by the feared secret police, who jailed dozens of activists. Assad turned to economic reforms. He slowly lifted economic restrictions, let in foreign banks, threw the doors open to imports, and empowered the private sector. Damascus and other cities saw a flourishing of shopping malls, new restaurants, and consumer goods, and tourism swelled. Abroad, he stuck to the line his father set, based on the alliance with Iran and a policy of insisting on a full return of the Israel-annexed Golan Heights, though Assad never militarily confronted Israel. We have Merriam-Webster's 2024 Word of the Year is Polarization by Anna Furman. The results of the 2024 U.S. presidential election rattled the country and sent shockwaves around the world, or were cause for celebration, depending on who you ask. Is it any surprise, then, that the Merriam-Webster word of the year is polarization? Polarization means division, but it's a very specific kind of division, said Peter Sokolowski, Merriam-Webster's editor-at-large, in an exclusive interview with the Associated Press ahead of Monday's announcement. Polarization means that we are tending toward the extremes rather than toward the center. The election was so divisive, many American voters went to the polls with a feeling that the opposing candidate was an existential threat to the nation. According to AP VoteCast, a survey of more than 120,000 voters, about 8 in 10 Kamala Harris voters were very or somewhat concerned that Donald Trump's views, but not Harris's, were too extreme, while about 7 in 10 Trump voters felt the same way about Harris, but not Trump. The Merriam-Webster entry for polarization reflects the scientific and metaphorical definitions. It's most commonly used to mean, quote, causing strong disagreement between opposing factions or groupings. Merriam-Webster, which logs 100 million page views a month on its site, chooses its word of the year based on data tracking a rise in search and usage. Last year's pick was authentic. This year's comes up as large swaths of the U.S. struggle to reach consensus on what is real. It's always been important to me that the dictionary serve as kind of neutral and objective arbiter of meaning for everybody, Sokolowski said. It's a kind of backdrop for meaning in an era of fake news, alternative facts, and whatever you want to say about the value of the word's meaning in the culture. It's notable that polarization originated in the early 1800s and not during the Renaissance, as did most words with Latin roots about science. He called it a pretty young word in the scheme of the English language. Polarized is a term that brings intensity to another word, he continued, most frequently used in the U.S. to describe race relations, politics, and ideology. The basic job of the dictionary is to tell the truth about words, the Merriam-Webster editor continued. We've had dictionaries of English for 420 years, and it's only been in the last 20 years or so that we've actually known which words people look up. Polarization extends beyond political connotations. It's used to highlight fresh cracks and deep rifts alike in pop culture, tech trends, and other industries. All the scrutiny over Taylor Swift's private jet usage? Polarizing. Beef between rappers Kendrick Lamar and Drake? Polarizing. The International Olympic Committee's decision to strip American gymnast Jordan Chiles of her bronze medal after the Paris Games? You guessed it. Polarizing. Even lighthearted memes like those making fun of Australian breakdancer Rachel Ragone Gunn's performance, or the proliferation of lookalike contests, or who counts as a Nepo baby, proved polarizing. Paradoxically, though, people tend to see eye to eye on the word itself. Sokolowski cited its frequent use among people across the political spectrum, including commentators from Fox News, MSNBC, and CNN. It's used by both sides, he said, and a little bit ironic twist to the word is something that actually everybody agrees on. Rounding out Merriam-Webster's top 10 words of 2024, we have demure. TikToker Jules LeBron's 38-second video describing her workday makeup routine as very demure, very mindful, lit up the summer with memes. The video has been viewed more than 50 million times, yielding huge spikes in lookups, Sokolowski said, and prompting many to learn it means reserved or modest. Taylor Swift's song Fortnite, featuring rapper Post Malone, undoubtedly spurred many searches for this word, which means 2 weeks. Music can still send people to the dictionary, he said. The solar eclipse in April inspired awe and much travel. There are tens of millions of people who live along a narrow stretch from Mexico's Pacific coast to eastern Canada. Otherwise, known as the Path of Totality, where locals and travelers gaze skyward to see the moon fully blot out the sun. Generally, the word refers to a sum or aggregate amount or wholeness. Texts developed by AI have a disproportionate percentage use of the word resonate, Sokolowski said. This may be because the word, which means to affect or appeal to someone in a personal or emotional way, can add gravitas to writing. But paradoxically, artificial intelligence also betrays itself to be a robot because it's using that word too much. This word, elision, was looked up 60 times more often than usual when, in March, a ship crashed into the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore. When you have one moving object hit into a fixed object, that's an elision, not a collision. If you're showing that one of the two objects struck was not, in fact, in motion. This summer on the TV news show Morning Joe, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz called Republican leaders weird. It may have been what launched his national career, landing him as the Democratic vice presidential nominee. Though it's a word that people typically misspell, is it E-I or I-E, and search for that reason, its rise in use was notable. Cognitive. This word, whether the word was used to raise questions about President Joe Biden's debate performance or Trump's own age, it cropped up often. It refers to conscious intellectual activity, such as thinking, reasoning, or remembering. And pander was used widely in political commentary, Sokolowski said. Conservative news outlets accused Kamala Harris of pandering to different groups, especially young voters, black voters, gun rights supporters, whereas Walz said Trump's visit to a McDonald's kitchen pandered to hourly wage workers. It means to say, do, or provide what someone, such as an audience, wants or demands, even though it is not a good, proper, or reasonable approach. And with that, we conclude the reading of the Pantagraph for Tuesday, December 10th, 2024. I'm Janice Schweizer, and I hope you have a great day.